Today's program has been brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com. HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
This is the news.
All right. Thanks for tuning in to this special report from the Heritage Radio Network. We are here on the line with Tony Butler, who's the executive director of St. John's Bread and Life. And I'm really excited to get a chance to talk a little bit more about some major news that hit the world last Monday, was leaked, and then presented on Thursday. Laudato Si was the first papal encyclical devoted solely to environmental issues. Really took the world by storm, and here on the line to help us understand it, Tony, thank you so much for making some time.
No, you're welcome. Good to talk with you.
So I think we have to start out with some basics for folks who are less familiar with the Catholic setup. What is an encyclical?
Encyclical, I mean, it's essentially a letter. I mean, it's an ancient kind of term that was originally a circulating letter among the bishops when a certain part of church teaching had to be disseminated. It was a letter that was circled around. Very early form of communication. Now it's a much more formal type of, it's one of the highest sort of forms of the Pope speaking on church document. It's held by Catholics that it's, when it deals with articles of faith and morals, that it's infallible. And it's used to kind of explain, to exhort, and to kind of explore issues, major church issues, and usually contemporary issues. Usually encyclicals respond to something going on at that time, written with that intent.
With that intent. And,
yeah.
And what about for folks who have not been following Pope Francis? He is a newer pope, and he has been making some waves more generally among the community of Catholics around the world and non-Catholics alike. Can you kind of lay the groundwork for what type of a pope he has been and what the reaction to his work has been?
He's the type of pope we haven't seen as Catholics since probably John the 23rd, and I think that comes out of that he's essentially a pastor. By profession, he's a pastor, a teacher, and he's also a chemist, too, which is an interesting kind of, as he's speaking on science. But he's a man who's worked with people. He's not been, through his career, kind of a professional churchman. He's not been a professional scholar. And for most of his career, working in Argentina, he's worked in very poor communities in Argentina. So I think that really frames what he does. It frames his notion of connectivity with people, and you see that in the encyclical, which deals tremendously with relationships.
Yeah, well, kind of on that same note, you know, I wanted to read a little excerpt that really kind of stuck out to me. Basically, just jumping right in, talking about the fact that many professionals, opinion makers, communications, media, and centers of power being located in affluent urban areas are far removed from the poor with little direct contact with them and their problems. They live and reason from the comfortable position of a high level of development and a quality of life well beyond the reach of the majority of the world's population. This lack of physical contact and encounter, encouraged at times by the disintegration of our city, can lead to numbing consciousness. And you know, he goes on to kind of lay out this kind of separation and growing separation between rich and poor, between haves and have-nots. And I have to imagine this is not a new theme in Catholicism, but how is he making the connection to climate change? I mean, for folks, is this like a surprise that he's making this link, or did this ring like obvious to you from the moment that you read about it?
I wouldn't say obvious, but the link is because it's an ancient link. It's a link that goes back to Genesis. I mean, it's interesting that the document, it starts with that we've hurt, to paraphrase, but he quotes St. Francis in talking about Sister Earth, and then he says the damage we've done to our sister. And he goes on to say that when in Genesis, when people left, if you will, when Adam and Eve left the garden, there were three things that were broken: the relationship with God, the relationship with each other, and the relationship with creation. So climate change is not something out there to be fixed. He has a very interesting phrase in the document that he doesn't want to use the word nature. He wants to use creation because we are part of it. And so as he talks about kind of the positions of power and the media and who speaks from this and their disconnect with the rest of the people, it's the same kind of disconnect we have from creation, that there's a relationship breakdown that's happened that's causing tremendous damage to each other, to the environment, and kind of to our kind of moral fiber in the world.
So you at St. John's Bread and Life work with a population that I feel a lot of us here in New York City do not spend a lot of time working with, sharing a meal with, talking to, listening to. You know, do you feel like you in your work through St. John's Bread and Life have been able to, you know, extrapolate some of these kind of same lessons?
I would think so. I mean, I've frequently used, you know, I've been out talking about Bread and Life, that one of the things we try to do is break down that notion of other. I mean, it's one of the most damaging things in our society, that it's those people. When we stop talking about those people and we start talking about we, then we can come together and look at the problems that are facing on both sides. What is the problem, say, in our case at Bread and Life, which is the problem of hunger, which is a man-made problem that can be responded to by humankind. But that notion of other is a really, really dangerous kind of thing. I mean, we saw it in a graphic, horrific way with the shooting in South Carolina, that one person thinking of a whole race of people as other that had to be stopped. And we see that, and a great deal of our folks are affected by that, which is one of the reasons the poor are so disenfranchised, because they buy into feeling as other, to be feeling as powerless, to be feeling felt as disconnected, and not being able to have any way to kind of address those grinding things that really do damage to themselves.
Well, and that kind of brings me to this idea, like, I'm not Catholic. And yet this document I know is going to have an impact on my worldview and on the world more broadly. Can you give us a sense of the scope of kind of Catholics in the world? I mean, when he's talking about these different populations making kind of decisions or assumptions to one another, I mean, really he's speaking to a global audience. So what is that, like, the kind of makeup of a global Catholic audience?
The word Catholic means universal, so it's a very, very mixed group of people. It's a huge number of people. I forget what the exact number is of Catholics in the world. I think it's like 1.2 billion Catholics in the world. It's the largest group of kind of one faith in the world. Now, that being said, running from conservative to liberal, poor to very wealthy, Eastern to Western, all of those things. But he's speaking to a group of people, and what he's speaking to in the encyclical is a group of people who have an obligation to transform the world. It's not a saying, you are doing something, how do I say this? You're doing something wrong and need to fix it. It's that you have, as stewards of this creation, you have an obligation. And he's even going beyond that, saying that people in power have an obligation. So it's not just preaching to the Catholics. A good encyclical tries to preach truth. And what I think he's done very well in this is talking about truths and the language being acceptable to folks who may not be familiar with, may not embrace, may not even accept kind of Catholic language.
So I'm wondering if you can share with us from where you sit, what were some of the surprises in this document or some of the things that really stuck out to you that had a personal relevancy or personal like saliency for you and the organization that you run and the community of people that you're a part of?
Once again, I think it is that connectivity, that things are seen as a whole. I felt very much, talking about the poor, I mean, there's very much a notion that we blame the poor for their problems. on that poverty is equated with sin. So the poor must be poor because they're lazy. And what he's saying is the poor are poor and in the main because of injustices, both injustices that are done personally and injustices that are done corporately and kind of injustices that have been done environmentally. I also liked, as I read it, I liked that it, a little geeky in me, but looking at the footnotes and like that, that it comes from a very long tradition of teaching. So it may appear to people that this is kind of a new thing in the church. He's quoting St. Thomas Aquinas. It goes quite a ways back. There's a consistency, which I like. I personally like that running an agency that comes out of kind of a Catholic, not kind of, but does come out of a Catholic perspective, that I find it invigorating that one man can produce a document that's really got people talking, and particularly a very wide and disparate group of people. One of the things I find interesting has been that the criticism of the document, most of the criticism of the document, has been attacks on the Pope. I've seen very little criticism of the document as a document. That they've been, I mean, calling the Pope a Marxist. Ted Cruz's interesting argument that the Pope should leave global warming to the scientists, and then in the next, but Ted Cruz discounts the science of global warming. So it's not as Ted Cruz said that, you know, we should leave these kind of things to scientists who deny global warming. There's a great article in The Onion about that, running kind of silly. But that notion, I have not seen much critical work or kind of ideas about the document. And I think it could be, it's a place for discussion. There's things I'm sure people disagree with or agree with. There's issues. I know the only probably thing I've seen so far that people have talked about in a reasonable and articulate and in a good sense argumentative way was the notion of population control versus is that impacting the environment or not?
Yeah, I thought that was so interesting. I know I want to share a quote here for folks. Yeah. It says, to blame population growth instead of extreme and selective consumerisms on the part of some is one way of refusing to face the issue.
Yeah. And I would agree with that. I mean, I posted something someplace on some Twitter account, but if we look at like the devastation in the Amazonian forest, that's not being that area is not overpopulated. It's not the people there destroying it. It's moving. It's not the Congo because of overpopulation is being destroyed. The Congo. It's because we're taking metals out and devastating the gorillas and all of that. It really is. I think what the Pope's done wonderfully is he's made that this is a problem of greed. That this is not a problem external to ourselves. I think we think. We've, for probably since the late Renaissance, and particularly in this country, we see nature as external, something. Nature is something to be conquered, nature to be something to be used, with no responsibility. He, as I said earlier, he sees nature and us as we are nature. And we have an obligation to protect that, and the destruction of nature is us abrogating our own obligation.
Yeah, I feel like one of the things that really stuck out to me was some of his comments regarding migration, which is, I feel like, this huge topic you're hearing about in international media right now, problems that are being faced by Greece, by France, by the UK. And he's really tying this migration issue to poverty caused by environmental degradation. Yeah. Yeah. And again, bringing it back to this international conversation of like, acts on one hand impact outcomes on the other. It was super powerful.
It's very powerful. I mean, it's scary powerful because he's asking questions that are responses that are, they are revolutionary.
Now,
somebody even said they're apocalyptic. I mean, they are. I mean, what he's looking at are transformative kind of things. And obviously things don't happen overnight, but I think we need to be challenging those really, really deep and profound ways, because we've reached a point that things aren't working.
And his namesake, I mean, Francis is the patron saint of the environment, isn't that right?
Yes, he is. And it's I always feel you know, Francis frequently is relegated to, you know, a cute little star, a statue in your garden. But Francis, which the Pope quotes St. Francis in the beginning about the earth, our sister, that's what Francis recognized, that the goodness, he through his poetry and his life, that everything created was good. Obviously, they, you know, recognize there's a hierarchy of goods, and we do agree. Heck, Heritage agrees that we can use some of the goods for our good, you know. But the notion of, say, responsible husbandry and responsible farming and like that. But he chose Saint Francis both for his love of the poor and his love of creation, and I think it's very telling, and it really came out in this document.
Well, so kind of bringing it back to the individual, I feel like as, you know, as a leader of the Heritage Radio Network and this organization, you know, one of the things I can do is obviously giving a careful read and deep thought to the actual encyclical and sharing that with folks and encouraging our hosts and our listeners to engage with this topic. What do you think? What do individuals? What would you encourage folks to take away as far as an action orientation as a result of this piece?
I think probably folks, myself included, listen to this, who are part of that first world and are part of that, that our action is that we have to look at. What are we doing either to make this better or make this worse? What are we doing with our buying patterns? What are we doing with our eating patterns? And particularly as first world people, it's usually our economic impact. So I think the followed probably by our political impact. But our economic impact, I would say the first thing of action is to look at what are we doing with our money.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Well,
yeah.
Tony, you know I'm a huge fan of you and your work. Thank you so much helping us understand. I'm definitely looking forward to circling back with you on many conversations.
Great.
I'm just starting to tuck into this and excited to continue to learn more.
All righty. Thanks again, Aaron.
For folks who want to find out more about St. John's Bread and Life and their work, definitely find them at www.breadandlife.org. Make a donation, sign up to volunteer, or just go for a visit. I know that you will be blown away by the amazing work that they do. And then hop online and read the encyclical yourself. It's 100 pages. It's going to be a rainy weekend. I can't think of a better way to take some steps forward. Thank you so much for listening. This special report, like all 39 of our weekly shows, is available for free by visiting www.heritageradionetwork.org. You can also find us on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you get your podcasts. If you like what you hear, please become a member today. We count on your support. Thank you so much for listening. Stay tuned in.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.